Welcome to Side Podcast episode 75, just listening to your talky thingamajig. Coming up today, we discuss testing at Monza, talk to a guest and change the name of the show.
You know how the format of this show works?
Yeah.
It's been pretty stable since about January.
We've made a few tweaks here and there, but it's pretty good.
So one section follows after another section, etc. Usually we do feedback at the end of the show.
Yeah.
However, I wanted to bring the feedback forward right to the very beginning of the show because we've had a really important message left on Facebook.
Yes.
From Mark Smith.
Absolutely.
And he's pointed out that in this week's Autosport magazine, they've got an innovative new feature that gathers together the week's short news stories and assigns them to either a good week section or a bad week section.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite good. They pick four items.
Right.
Two good.
Yep.
And two bad. And it's quite interesting, actually. Yeah. I'm quite excited by that.
Sounds like a great idea.
I don't know where I've ever heard that before.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Kimi Raikkonen because he gets to keep his job. Luca de Montezemolo has put pay to all the rumours this week by saying Ferrari's driver lineup in 2009 will be the same as this year, and that contrary to popular opinion, Kimi is as motivated as ever.
What we want to know, really, is what's happening in 2010.
Yeah, we never doubted that 2009 would be the same, really.
No, but he's not saying anything about the following year. Just next year is all good.
It's been a bad week for fans of the Nürburgring.
Of which there aren't that many.
Because the FIA may pull it from the calendar. The German sporting authority is controlled by the ADAC, and they won't talk to the FIA because of Max, and it's all going to end in tears.
I am surprised it's taken this long, to be honest with you. And it's not going to happen immediately either, is it? There's going to be a meeting in October to have a look at this.
Things never happen quickly with the FIA, do they?
But it does. It seems almost certain that the ADAC are going to be stripped of this title, and then the race is going to be put into jeopardy.
Yeah, at the extraordinary general meeting, they're also going to be talking about the Indian sporting authority as well, aren't they?
Oh, Vijay better watch out. He's one of Bernie's friends. Being a friend of Bernie right now is not a good thing to be if you want to be associated with the FIA, and he might find himself for the chop. Although, isn't he? He's part of both Indian bodies. Motorsport bodies at the moment, isn't
it? So either way he wins.
At the moment, either way he wins. And I'm curious to see what the FIA are going to do about that.
It's been a good week for Takuma Sato as he's had talks with Toro Rosso for a race drive. Although his spokesperson said there's nothing to confirm yet, he's another in a long line of drivers linked with the team for 2009.
God help us all.
It's been a bad week for organisers at Valencia as they had to apologise to spectators because they couldn't see. The official quote says that some of the seating did not have visibility of the track. You'd think that might be quite important for a Grand Prix.
Muppets. The same thing happened at Fuji. How hard is it to sit in a seat and think, well, can I see the track here or not?
Yeah.
And if you can't, don't sell tickets.
It also looks like they're going to tear down the marketplace building where the pit lane was during the race. That was the best bit about the track.
It was. I read this on a couple of sources earlier in the week and they didn't specifically say it was the pit building. But Stephen Roy pointed out in the comments earlier on this afternoon that Crash.net were reporting it would be those specific buildings, which would be a shame. So I'm not sure if Crash.net have got it around their neck or whether the original report was wrong, but it would be a big shame to see those disappear because they were, frankly, one of the best bits about the Valencian track.
News and views.
There was a three-day test at Monza this week. Not that interesting, not super-duper interesting, but there's a few things of note.
Okay.
Massa led the first day, but Williams were more important in third. They seemed to do much better than recently.
Okay, it's not an aero circuit, so they may do well at Monza if they've got a decent power in that Toyota engine, which is not necessarily a given because Toyota have said that they've stuck to the spirit of the law as well as the letter, so they haven't done a lot of engine development. But if Williams got a decent engine in the back of the car, they may get over their aero problems at this circuit, and they may feature quite well.
Force India also had a good day. They had Liuzzi in the seat and he finished less than a second behind the others, which is good. That's progress.
Now, what I'm thinking is that he's pitching for a job next year.
Oh, really?
The seats haven't been confirmed yet, have they?
No.
And if he can keep the pace up, if he can show the other drivers what's what, do you think he might be able to squeeze in there?
In place of who?
Personally, I'd put him in place of Sutil.
The second day of testing saw Heidfeld on top, which is good because BMW have just told him to get a wriggle on.
Yes.
So he was obviously out to impress that day. Alonso was testing for Renault and they said they're working on the slow lap tyre thing.
Right.
So they've actually confirmed it now.
Fundamentally disagree with.
Yeah.
They're working on that.
Yeah, they've confirmed it now because apparently they took the data from Germany because Piquet finished second and they think that he had pace because he did a few laps behind the safety car.
Right.
So what they think is going slow for a couple of laps helps out the tyres, and that's why they've been doing this pre-practice thing.
This is why they started in Hungary.
Yeah, and they're testing it out now, and it just seems ridiculous to me.
Why is it that nobody else has complained?
Well, no one's complained, and also, do they not think that other people might have noticed this?
Yes.
If it worked.
Well, as we said before, other teams have looked at it and thought, well, if it works for them, that's okay, but it's a waste of time because we need to be doing something more important during those free practice sessions.
Yeah.
And it's called a free practice session. It's not called a warm-up your tyre session, is it? And they're not getting any practice out there. They're just curing a tyre, which they believe is helping them, but as far as we could tell in Valencia, it didn't make the slightest bit of difference.
And really, what they need to realise is that Piquet finishing second was a fluke. And whatever you do with your tyres, it's not going to happen again. Hamilton finished the test with the fastest time on day three, but all eyes should have been on Force India because Fisichella ended up third.
So he's keeping his eye on Liuzzi.
Yeah.
Keeping
ahead of
him.
Keeping his job, isn't he, next
year? I think I quite like that lineup, actually. Liuzzi and Fisichella for another year. Yeah.
Kubica had a crash as well on the last day, but it wasn't anything serious.
No, I don't know too much about this, but Ollie in the comments has helped me out. And he's pointed out that it wasn't a major problem. Although it did take them a long time to fix the damage that Kubica did.
So they missed out on some running time.
Yeah, I'd imagine an accident at Monza is going to be quite big. It's a fast circuit, and if you go and you hit the runoff and you hit the barrier, it's going to total your car. So it probably didn't please the BMW guys. It's unusual for him to go off, though. I don't remember the last time he went off in testing. Isn't it about time we did an interview?
Didn't we just do one last week?
Well, we've been talking long enough.
Yeah.
It's time we heard from somebody else, I believe.
Okay.
And on the line, in just a moment, we're hoping to get Mr. Scott Woodwiss.
Yes.
Who, you may be familiar with him if you do fantasy races.
Well, I'm happy with him because he's in 137th, which is behind me. Yay!
Yes. Although, didn't he start until the Catalunian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Which was, what, four or five, almost five races in, is it?
Yeah.
And you started in the first race of the season.
Yep.
So he's bound to be behind you. And he's not that far behind, considering he missed out so many races at the beginning of the year.
All right.
I wouldn't be too proud of that if I were you. Shall we get him on the line?
Yes.
Is Scott there, and can he ring us, please?
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hello there. How's it going, sir?
Not too bad. How are you?
Never better, actually. Things are just going too well this weekend. Last weekend, a bit of a panic, and we were all stressed.
Yeah.
It's all working now.
Yeah. You press the button, and it all works.
Everybody's happy. And so you're having a good evening, then, are you?
At the moment, yes. Everything's going well.
Good stuff.
And a nice weekend. And yeah,
we've got some difficult and taxing questions for you. So I hope you hope you've been prepared for this. Shall we get started?
Sort of.
Okay. The first and most difficult question is: how long have you been an F1 fan?
Since I was two. To be honest, I received it was a signed picture from Nigel Mansell.
Wow.
When I was 2 years old. And which I've still got, and amazingly, obviously with normal babies, their first word is either mum or dad. Mine was actually Mansell.
Wow. So at the age of two, you probably didn't know that much about Formula One, what was going on. So now, why are you an F1 fan these days? What do you like about it?
I just think I've been a fan of motorsport all my life since 2 years old. So I'm not just a fan of like Formula One. My motorsport taste, if you call it that, is quite diverse. I like rallying, sports cars, all sorts of things. But I think Formula One is because I suppose many fans would say it's the pinnacle of motorsport, and it's where you see the best drivers and the best cars around the best circuits. And it's just, well, most of the time it's great racing, but as we've seen in Valencia, you do get one or two lemons every now and then. But
so you've been watching Formula One for many, many years. Never before have we had the prospect of a night race. Are you looking forward to it? And what do you think?
Oh,
what do you think it's going to bring?
Absolutely, I'm looking forward to it thoroughly. I think it will bring a whole new look and a whole new aspect to Formula One, because obviously everyone in Formula One has been associated with racing in the day. Now you've got a new element, which is racing at night. And unless the past Formula One drivers have raced at Le Mans or something, or they've been doing endurance racing, they will have no experience of racing at night.
Did you happen to catch the MotoGP night race when they did that?
I did catch the last few laps of it, and it did look very impressive how they did it, that set up in Qatar.
Yeah.
I think in terms of Formula One doing a night race, I think it'll be a real big popularity, sort of commercial boost to the sport. And I think it'll be a great spectacle, and anyone who gets to go there will probably be the luckiest guys in the world to go and see the first ever Formula One night race.
I believe F1 Wolf is doing that, which
jealous.
Is quite annoying, because he went to Valencia as well. So we've got to have words with Mr. Effenwolf and the money that he's generating from his website. Because we're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Although I think probably one worrying aspect would be that I hope the organisers don't get any power cuts, because if they do, then they'll be, well...
Yes.
The Singapore Grand Prix is probably one of the most anticipated of this season, but then they've all been quite good, except maybe Valencia. So do you think this season is better than last year?
I think it's 10 times better than last year. I think banning traction control has been a huge sort of boost to the popularity, mainly because it's not just down to the electronics driving the car, technically. It's now driver skill. And I think we're now seeing a much more, I suppose you could say, a level playing field. It wasn't for, obviously, the different gaps between the cars. I mean, obviously, Ferrari's not the same as a Force India, and otherwise in terms of the engine. But I think this year's season, everything's been closer and it's been tightened up, because I remember reading in Autosport that the gap between the back and the front of the field has now closed up from about 7 or 8 seconds to just down to 2 seconds. So I think in terms of how technology's gone and I think how everything's advanced, I think this has been the best season for a long, long time.
And do you miss the politics of last year?
No. I don't really get into the politics side of F1. I think I just say, let the FIA sort out what they have to sort out, and leave the racing aspect out of it, and just let the... In fact, there shouldn't be any sort of politics in Formula 1. It should be all down to the racing and nothing more.
The last 2 years we've had have been pretty good. I mean, if you leave the politics out of it. So do you think that changing the regulations so drastically next year is a good idea or not? Because we're having good racing now. We don't really want to mess that up.
I think that next year the racing will be even better, because I seen on the front of the Autosport magazine, there was a picture which they've done a rendition of what a 2009 car will look like. And I think it looks absolutely fantastic.
How would you describe that for anyone who hasn't seen that picture?
Okay, I'd probably say, if I was to try and describe it to someone, I think it's sort of like a 2001, 2002 Formula One car with sort of like a, say, around a 1990 rear wing on the back,
right.
and no barge boards or little sprouting bits of bodywork or anything, no shark fins. It's just a bog standard single seater Formula One car and slick tyres, and that's how it needs to be.
And so it's much cleaner, and the rear wing is much higher.
Yeah, it is. It's a thinner and taller rear wing,
okay.
Which is it's sort of getting back to how they were in, say, the late 80s, early 90s. And I think that's my favourite part of it, the rear wing. So
looking forward to next year.
Yeah, I like that. Yes, of course.
Earlier on in the show, we were talking about Renault and their new plan to cure their tyres by going incredibly slowly in the middle of the racing line during free practice. Where do you stand on the safety aspect of that? And what do you think should be done, if you disagree with it, what do you think can be done in order to prevent them from doing it in the future?
I think it's quite dangerous, because it's going to be quite a surprising and quite horrific prospect for someone to come herring around one corner and find a Renault going at, say, 60 miles an hour on the speed limit.
Yep.
Because I think if Renault continue how they're doing, there's going to be a point saying the practice qualifying. I suppose I think it's only in practice, where there is going to be one monumental accident.
Yep.
And the simple fact is that when there is, it will be Renault's fault, because they've allowed their drivers to do that kind of thing.
It's not even so allowed. They've deliberately asked them to do that. I don't think I get the impression the drivers aren't too happy about it. And it's come from somewhere within the technical department.
Well, I think in that case, I think the FIA do need to step in and say to them, this is unacceptable, because because you are causing a potential threat to other drivers. And this needs to be stopped.
Hmm. No, I think that's probably pretty much where we're coming from. And maybe, Singapore's coming up. It's a night race. We don't know what that might entail, but it could be quite dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially if there is sort of a problem with, even one or two lights on a corner. If the Renault boys are out there doing that kind of thing, messing around and, driving slowly, trying to get more heat into their tyres, then, as I've said, if someone just comes hanging around the corner, say a BMW or Ferrari, just for an example, and they haven't got time to spot them, it's just going to be one huge accident.
In the live comments, Ollie just pointed out that Heikki and Hamilton got into trouble in Malaysia for driving slowly on the line, so Renault should get a telling off as well.
I agree with Ollie. I mean, as much as I am a Hamilton fan and a McLaren, I think that obviously what they did in terms of the slowing down lap in Malaysia and qualifying, I think that it was a punishable offence, and I think if Renault continues to do the same, then they'd find themselves in the same situation.
We've got to take a short break now, but when we return, we'll be back with Scott and we'll catch up with your feedback. If you don't have the time to trawl through website after website looking for Formula One news, let F1 Minute do the hard work for you. Delivered to your ears every weekday, F1 Minute is 60 seconds of headlines keeping you up to date with drivers, teams, rules, regulations, testing, races, launches, results, quotes, anything you can think of. Visit f1minute.com for all the details and to find the latest show. We're back with Scott, and the next thing I wanted to talk about was the engine freeze. And we've already heard complaints that perhaps Ferrari and McLaren are sticking to the letter of the law, but not necessarily the spirit, while other people may be suffering for sticking to the regulations. Do you think that the homologation rules are working, or whether we'll see an end to them anytime soon?
I think, first of all, in terms of if teams are starting to complain to the other teams that they're making upgrades on these engines, then the simple facts should be saying to them, well, if it's being allowed, then the simple fact is, you know, why aren't they doing it? You know, you can't really say that something's, you know, complain something which is legal. I mean, the fact is that they're being allowed to do it. If they've decided to not do any upgrades, then fair enough, it's their decision. But, you know, they may find themselves that later on, if they hadn't done any upgrades, they'll be kicking themselves because then they may find themselves behind.
Very true. There's talk also this week regarding engines that potentially some of the teams who haven't been keeping up with the development are now pushing for turbos to be reintroduced to Formula One. They're using the angle, I believe, that it should be more efficient in terms of fuel and then present a greener image of Formula One to the public. No doubt it's no coincidence that it's the teams that are behind who are pushing for this, but do you think turbos should be reintroduced to Formula One? And if they are, what difference will it make to the racing?
As long as they change the engines to V6s and inline fours, I have no problem with that.
Hold on a second. There. A V6 and an inline four means what? You went a bit geeky there with that sentence.
Have you not heard of the 80s Formula One?
Okay. So 80s Formula Ones were V6 engines, were they?
Yes, there were V6s for the most part, but there are one or two teams who decided to run inline four engines.
Inline four engines. So that's four cams.
Let's just say four cylinders.
Four cylinders, we'll okay. And that's desirable for what reason?
How it worked was that they obviously had like a boost sort of, you know, sort of switch inside or sort of like knob or something which they could turn to turn the boost up, as in like boost pressure.
Okay. Yep.
So, and they obviously only did this for qualifying because so they could get, you know, the fastest lap times, and it was, you could easily see you know, cars back in the 80s producing around 1200 even 1300 brake horsepower. Easy for qualifying.
Okay.
But then obviously when it came back to the race, they had to turn it down for obviously
longevity
for the race. Yep. Yeah.
Presumably if they bring this back though, is it a different would it notably change how Formula One sounds if you suddenly brought back turbos?
I think if you listening onto the onboard, you probably would hear like a turbo sort of whistle from the chatter from the wastegate, I would guess. But in terms of engine sounds, if they were to go back to V6s and the four-cylinder engines, there would be a massive difference in engine noise, because the engine noise, the notes were much lower and they were more grumblier and they were much nicer sound, in my opinion. Not that I'm knocking the V8 sound.
No, that's pretty nice. That's okay. I mean, it's interesting what you're saying, because Christine looks completely bored, but you've taken Side Podcast in a completely different direction now, because I've never been able to geek out about engine specs on a podcast before.
In the comments, they say that the boys are talking geek, so I've just tuned out.
That's interesting. Okay, talking of history, this week it was announced that Phil Hill passed away.
Yes.
And now I didn't actually know too much about Phil. I know a lot more this week as a result of his passing. The guy was important because he was the only American ever to win the Formula One world title. How much would a difference do you think it would make in the States nowadays if they had a Formula One driver capable of doing that? Do you think it would? Do you think Bernie would eventually bring back the American Grand Prix, and would it interest from America increase as a result of that?
I think, to be honest, the reputation for Formula One in America really hasn't recovered since the fiasco they had in 2005 with the tyres and Michelin and everything like
sure,
that.
Yep.
But I think that if there was a Formula One driver capable, an American Formula One driver capable of being successful and winning races, then, I mean, sure, I mean, it's worked for us with Lewis Hamilton. You know, the support's come back and, you know, we've had more F1 fans coming through. I think it would boost the popularity, but if for me personally, I probably would go to a different circuit, not Indianapolis.
Okay, that would be a start. Is there anything we can do, or anything that Bernie can do, or Formula One's teams can do, to breed a Formula One driver in the same way that Lewis Hamilton was found at an early age and discovered, and then walked through the entire of the Formula One life cycle, even before he sat in a Formula One car? Is there anything that the team should be doing to look to America? Because obviously they're all saying America's our key market and it's really important to us, but they're not actually doing anything, as far as we're aware, to make that happen. Red Bull had a driver's program that found Scott Speed, but beyond that, no one's actually making any effort. Is that, should we lay some of the blame at the team stores for not doing that, and should they be doing more?
I mean, I remember reading somewhere back in 2005 when Danica Patrick, when she was in the lead in the Indy 500 that year, I think it's 2005, everyone was making a big noise about her, saying that not, if she was to come to Formula One, she's American, mm-hmm. and she's also a female. Mm-hmm. So I think, and obviously there's been also talk of her being a test driver for Honda. Now, whether that would, if that was to happen, and that would, you know, with her to lead to Formula One, I think that would be a great boost, because it's, it'll bring in two aspects which really sort of are being brought back. One, that she's American, yep. and that if she is successful, then it works. Mm-hmm. And two, that she's female, because there's been hardly any female Formula One drivers.
Yes.
So I think it would be not only a boost to the Americans' coverage of Formula One, but I think to worldwide, worldwide recognition of Formula One, because it'll be classed as a multi-gender sport then.
So they could actually be doing something now, rather than even a long-term thing for the future. They could literally, you know, get their fingers out of their pockets and get the girl over and get her testing and see what she's capable of.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think Danica has now proved herself, because she's now won an IndyCar race. But I think it's not just Danica. I think there are some good American drivers out there who could do well. I think Marco Andretti could run well as a driver. I think maybe also Graham Rahal.
Yep.
I think the teams just need to, you know, really, to be honest, you know, get off their backsides,
yes.
and get out there and start, you know, scouting for American talent. If they're saying that America's their target market, then as far as we can see, they're doing nothing to try and try and benefit from that.
That's true. And also, just looking at the live comments, Alex has pointed out that Lewis and Danica in the same team would be huge. That would be an awesome thing to see. And Ollie has said that although bringing her over is one thing, if she didn't do very well, it wouldn't make any difference, in the same way that Scott Speed didn't make the blindest bit of difference when he was in her Toro Rosso. So Danica is the long-term future, but in the short term, we've got Spa coming up shortly. In fact, next week.
Yes.
Traditionally, it's been a Ferrari circuit. Kimi won there last year, dominated last year.
He's won the last three, apparently.
He's won the last three Grand Prix at that circuit. What do you think about Kimi's potential of saving his championship this year? And do you think he's got it in him? And how do you think he's going to fare at Spa?
In terms of my personal opinion of Kimi, has been for the last couple of races that he's bored.
Okay.
To be honest, he's got everything he needs. I mean, he's won a world championship. He's got money. He's famous. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got two houses, one in Switzerland, another one in Finland. Apparently, he's also got a Ferrari Enzo. So really, he's got everything he really needs. Like I've said before, I think really the question in his mind would probably be, you know, is it time to stop?
But Montezemolo renewed his faith in his driver this week, and he said that all is fine for next year. So it doesn't sound like Kimi's going to hang up his helmet at the end of the year.
Well, the thing is, Kimi's still really quite young in driver terms, and I mean, you can tell he likes to race, because, you know, when he's in there fighting for races,
yes.
he's doing well. But obviously, at the moment, they're struggling a little bit, and I think that's put him down slightly.
Okay.
But now that Montezemolo has renewed his faith, maybe that'll give him a bit of a boost.
It'll make the difference.
Yeah.
So you don't see him. Christine doesn't think he's going to finish at the end of the year, and he's going to continue 2009. Yep. Scott, if you're thinking he's bored, do you think it's going to be a last-minute thing in the off-season? He just says, that's enough, I'm leaving? Or do you think he's still in it for another year?
At the end of the day, I think that 2009 will be his last season if he stays on.
Okay.
I mean, I even joke that when his engine blew up in Europe, he sort of, you know, looked in his mirrors and went, oh, my engine's gone.
Right.
Oh, well.
Yes.
And just got out of the car, just not really thinking about it.
In fairness, though, we think that's because he was expecting it.
They all were expecting it, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah, so he knew he was on it. It was a time limit before it went, as opposed to, and he kind of expected it, I'd imagine, to be almost on the last lap. So in that instance, you might be able to forgive him for not being too plussed, and potentially not even for trying in the race. Because if you know going into qualifying, your engine isn't going to last. You don't want to take a 10-place penalty because you're out of the race anyway. And you don't want to have to fight, because you're going to push your engine to the limit and then write it off. So I can see why I'm almost going to write off Valencia as not really a fair comparison for Kimi's attitude.
So if we've come to the conclusion that Kimi's not going to do that well for the rest of the season, who do you think is going to win the championship?
This is the time when you put your neck on the line, by the way, and we will hold you to this. And when we do the season review in December,
we will reference it.
It will be the quote that gets used. So think very carefully
no
before
pressure.
You answer this question. One more time, the question for Scott.
Who's going to win the championship?
This would probably be a very predictable answer, but I'm going to say Hamilton.
And why?
Because I think out of the four people who are looking in the championship, I think that maybe he's been the most consistent.
And for the WCC?
As much as it pains me to say it, I think that everyone knows I pretty much despise them. I think it'll be Ferrari, because at the moment they're in front, and I think that in these last few races they can just keep. I think they'll probably just keep scoring points and staying ahead. Although having said that, I think McLaren might just come back, and so for the constructors, I think it'll be neck and neck coming for the last couple of races. But I think that. Knowing Ferrari, they always find a way to win something in the end.
Okay, well, you heard it here first.
Prost questionnaire.
I had an email this week from Alex, who was on the show last week.
Okay.
And he had a brilliant idea.
What did he say?
He said, I wondered if there were a set of generic questions a la James Lipton on Inside the Actors Studio. In case you haven't seen it, they have a regular one-on-one interview for most of the show, and then at the end, they ask the same set of 10 questions to everyone, regardless of who they are. All the biggies in the acting world have answered it. The questions they have on that show are like favourite word, least favourite word, favourite sound, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They call the process the Proust questionnaire.
Okay.
The cool thing is that over time, you can see if there are common answers. The answers are supposed to be quickfire, one answer or phrase or sentence. Now, as we are in the business of Formula One, I am thinking of 10 generic Formula One questions. We could even tip the hat and call them the Prost questionnaire.
Let's see what he did there.
That's genius.
Hey. Very clever.
And Alex has come up with some questions, so we thought we would give it a go, and Scott can be our first victim.
Okay.
Favourite race?
The 1998 Belgian Grand Prix, off the top of my head, simply because I have one of the biggest start accidents in the world.
Favourite driver?
Of all time, I would definitely say Ayrton Senna.
Favourite team?
Right now, I'd say that'd be McLaren.
Best F1 moment?
For me, when Hamilton won his first race.
Least favourite race?
I'd probably say Valencia this year, because it was an absolute lemon.
Least favourite driver?
Alonso, because of the scandal last season.
Least favourite team?
Ferrari, because they've been dominating in the past, and I despise them at the moment.
Worst F1 moment?
Probably say the worst F1 moment was when Ayrton Senna died.
F1 villain.
Again, I'd probably say that's Alonso.
F1 hero.
I'm going to go for Kubica, actually, because he won his first race this season.
That's excellent. That's brilliant. Thank you, Alex, for that idea. That's going to be a long-running winner, I think. And look out for that idea in next issue of Autosport magazine. That was brilliant. I think you held up very, you know, despite the nerves, I think you did a very good job there, and very much appreciate it for your time. We loved it.
Feedback.
We had a good voicemail from Sean this week. He's talking about Ferrari's position in the pit lane, which we were discussing last week, and also his thoughts on the Valencia GP.
Hi, Sean here from the, well, you know me, Sean's Blister Blog. I was just listening to your talky thingamajig, episode 74. You probably already know this, but at Silverstone, Ferrari are at the start of the pit lane. And I don't know whether you've read my blog, but I really was disappointed with Valencia. Really, I think it's a kind of Grand Prix to forget. A bit of an anti-climax. Nothing really to write home about. But anyway, we've got Spa coming up next, which hopefully should be a complete contrast. And isn't it unfortunate that the two Spanish Grand Prix have been the most boring parade-like Grand Prix so far? We've got to give Valencia another chance, I suppose, next year with the new cars, and they're supposedly designed more for overtaking, so see what happens.
Two things there, then. Firstly, very good point about Silverstone. Ferrari were first,
yep.
And the last team in the pit lane were Force India, because they were nearest to us. So we do know that. We should have remembered that.
Yes, I have no memory whatsoever. So, oh, and the other thing is, we know that he didn't like Valencia because the blog post was called Valencia F1 Circuit Sucked Debut Review.
That's a great title.
Although we said that the You Know You're an F1 Fan competition was over.
It was aced, I believe.
We've had some more.
Okay.
Some good ones.
Please go ahead.
The first one is from Anthony Christensen, who said, you know you're a Formula One fan when you get into your car for your morning commute and at every red light you keep the revs up and at the green light you peel out to leave rubber down as to practice your own personal pit stop.
Yeah, like that. Yep.
Also, Nathan Federman had a couple. He said, you know you're an F1 fan when you live in the US but still spell tyres with a Y. I like that one.
Yep.
And you know you're an F1 fan when you take your car into the shop to have said tyres replaced because they were graining. You know you're an F1 fan when you encounter a headwind on your bicycle that slows you down and you explain to your friends that there was a problem with the wind tunnel calibrations.
Right. I like cycling, that one. That's the first cycling one. I like that.
It's a good one. I also had an email this week about the ongoing TV coverage question, what TV coverage is like where you are. This time it's from Caesar in Mexico, and he said, I was listening to you guys talking and, well, mostly complaining about your TV coverage, which I frankly envy because I believe the only good thing about the Mexican F1 TV coverage is that we can watch the race live, only in cable or satellite networks. I don't really know the TV coverage quality in all the country, but I live nearby Mexico City, and only live coverage we get is Fox Sports Latin America. It's not HD. The commenters are three Argentinians. They have a reasonable knowledge of the sport, but I think they are really far away from the action, even when talking about the Brazilian GP.
Wow.
In the regular TV networks, we have a delay varies between 6 and 12 hours, and this is only the race, no preview, no press conference, just the race. But if a huge soccer game is taking place somewhere in the country, the delay can be bigger, and also every race or quali event is regularly interrupted with commercial advertisements.
That's not good. Presumably all their presenters are in a studio back home,
yeah,
which is what we think BBC are going to do next year, and that doesn't sound like it's a good thing.
Housekeeping.
As if we don't produce enough content, you've come up with another idea for a show, haven't you?
Well, I got roped into this one. This wasn't my idea.
It was your idea.
No, this was public suggestion, I believe. Was it my idea?
It was your idea. You said, actually, I think this might be a good idea, but don't tell Christine.
Oh, yeah. No. I swear this idea originally came from Mr. Stephen Roy, and you should put all your blame at his door.
Okay.
I'm sure he said what would be really good is if you did a show.
I blame you.
Prior. We would. It would be really cool if you did a show prior to the Sunday race. So Sunday morning when everyone's just hanging around and they're gathering together and they're thinking what to do. Why didn't you do a podcast live Sunday morning as a pre-race show? I don't think that was my idea.
Okay. Well, you thought it was a good idea and have signed up for it, haven't you?
I admit to that. I thought it was a very good idea. I put it out to the comments, and pretty much everything that came back was a good and positive comment. And everyone likes the idea. So that's what we're going to do starting in Spa.
Yes. So the idea is, what is it, an hour before the race starts in the UK?
An hour before ITV coverage starts in the UK.
Right.
An hour before the race. So we're not fighting with ITV.
No.
And we're not trying to be better than them. We're just going to do a show before they come on air. That's the plan. So 1 hour before they start, we'll start. We'll run for an hour and we'll stop exactly the point that the ITV music starts. That's the plan.
I'm sure we'll confirm it nearer the time.
Yeah.
But the idea is for just a bit of chat, nice relaxed atmosphere, maybe some music even.
It's going to be missable content. That's the idea behind it. So it's going to be a bit of music, a bit of laid back discussion.
Yep.
If you're
around,
yes,
you know, tune in, have a bit of a chat about F1, nothing serious, nothing major.
It's the kind of thing you can have on in the background, not really paying much attention. You can cook your dinner and you know, just go about your business on a Sunday morning. But if something interesting comes along, you can just sort of focus on it and then, you know, catch up with that a little bit and then move on to the next thing.
So that's two shows on a Sunday. And recently you've been referencing this show as the Sunday show. So that's not going to work anymore.
This causes a problem. I do realise that because it's a Sunday show. Rather than the Sunday show.
Yeah, so it's going to be like the Sunday show 1 and the Sunday show 2.
There is a solution.
Oh, yeah?
All we need to do is name the two shows.
Okay.
So you've got a pre-race show and a post-race show.
Yeah.
And the post-race show is pretty easy because that's a debrief.
Yes.
It's after the series has ended, after the race has ended, the end of the weekend. We're looking back on everything that's happened. So I'm thinking F1 debrief will be what is effectively this show. And then the bit before the race, we're going to call that...
the parade lap.
Yay. I like that. I'm liking that. So the parade lap comes before, and that's missable content. It's chilled out and it's relaxed. And it's basically as the drivers go around waving their way around around the track.
We'll just be talking.
We'll just be chatting around and talking over it. And then afterwards, it's the debrief, and we're looking back on the whole race weekend. And that's your two Sunday shows coming up, starting in Spa.
Well, I look forward to that next week. I think that's it for this show. I think we're done. Thanks to Scott for the interview.
Yep.
And thanks to the people in the live comments.
Much appreciated.
Thank you for their joining input. Us.
Yes.
Next week, we'll be looking at Spa.
Oh, yes.
And hoping for a better race.
Well, next week, it's going to be the parade lap.
Yes.
First.
That's true.
So do join us there.